Hey everyone, I'm excited to introduce you to Alvini Kwok, who I met through, actually, was it Aaron that we've met through that?
Possibly.
Aaron,
Yeah,
yeah,
possibly.
at LinkedIn. Aaron and I used to work together at LinkedIn, and yeah, I think you're probably a master networker. But when you told me you did a 10-day silent Vipassana, like I was like, oh my God, like I want to know all about it, because I think that would be like probably one of the most difficult things for me to do personally.
Thanks for the intro, Davidson. So the retreat, I would also say it was one of the most difficult things I've done mentally and physically.
Yeah.
And it can sound silly because you think, oh, well, you're sitting there and meditating and you're not really doing any physical labor. But the mental challenge was being able to sit through any kind of feelings that would come up, uncomfortable feelings, pain that would come up. And there'd be times where we'd have to sit for an hour without moving any of our limbs. And
Oof.
so I think I should backtrack a little bit and talk about what the experience was. So I
Yeah.
decided to attend this course because I wanted to learn how to just be present to reality, be present with whatever came up for me, and be able to move through difficult emotions by accepting them for what they were instead of pushing them away. And I thought that this course would just help prepare me for other areas of my life because there's a lot of unexpected things that can happen during the course of our lives, right? So I think going through the course, every person will have their own experience. For me, I'd say the biggest takeaways were one, the lesson of impermanence, how so much of life is impermanent, like your job, your relationships with people, with friends, and even life in general. People come into this world and they also go at some point. And you can't predict when death occurs. So being able to accept the realities of life was a big lesson for me during this period. Another lesson was understanding how I am the cause of my own joy and also the cause of my own misery. So, for example, during the course, it got to a point where I was unable to just sit still on the meditation cushion, and I needed a backrest. I asked for a backrest, but I still decided to not use it because I saw other people during the course just sitting straight on a simple meditation cushion, and I was thinking, if they can do that, why can't I? And so I would force myself to not rely on the backrest. But then what happened internally was I started to build a lot of resentment towards myself. And I would be thinking, why is it so hard? Why does my knee hurt? Why does my back hurt? Why can't I do this? And so all these feelings would amplify, right? And eventually on day eight, I asked the teacher, is it okay if I am relying on a backrest? Like, am I cheating myself of this experience? And her response to me was no. Like, why are you creating misery for yourself, right? The purpose of this meditation course is for you to learn. It's for you to learn how to meditate and sit when you're in a comfortable position. The teacher does not tell you, like, you have to sit in an uncomfortable position. So it occurred to me, I was like, oh my gosh, I spent 8 days with a resource, and yet I decided to not use that resource, to not rely on the help that I asked for. And it made me think about, okay, well, what other areas of my life do I create my own misery? And, it was just very enlightening to go through this kind of of experience physically, but also be able to gather insight that I could apply to other areas of life. So I want to pause there for a second. Those are some of the key takeaways that I had.
Yeah, that's deep. So I think, well, I think it's fair, right? I think we always compare ourselves to others. So it's like, oh, these people, like, they seem so at peace and they're not complaining about their back. Like, what makes them, how come they're not like struggling? Or maybe they are and we just don't know, right? It's like, yeah, that's
And you bring up a really good point about the comparison, this need for comparison that we may have. And what was another lesson from this course was that you hear the term like comparison is a thief of joy, or this phrase, comparison is a thief of joy, right? And this goes for anybody who ends up going through the course, is that my experience may be very different from yours. And so go in with an open mind without expecting like, oh, you're gonna have this grand realization, because if you expect that and you don't get it, then you're gonna be disappointed. So one of the other takeaways was when we have these really big expectations, when we crave something and we don't reach that goal, and we get super disappointed, if it gets to a spot where it starts to, like this reaction starts to manifest in the form of negative like thoughts about ourselves, negative stories and narratives about ourselves, then those are things that we carry with us inside our body, right? And so I think my lesson there was to just acknowledge that if something doesn't happen the way we expect it, if you want to be like truly liberated in life, you have to learn how to detach yourself from this outcome. So it's not that having these goals or aspirations are bad. You can still have these goals, but if you're so attached to the outcome that it affects the way you think about yourself and your self-worth, then you're constantly chained to this external factor. So that's what came up for me. And I'd actually love to ask you this, Stevenson, like, do you find areas of your life where you notice maybe detachment to an outcome and how that's affected the way like you go about living?
Oh man, that's a deep question. I definitely think, I think being Asian, like we have a lot of attachment to career success, right? The context of, I mean, maybe most immigrants, right, come in with like, oh, you know, my parents sacrificed whatever it is they had to migrate to a different country and, you know, give us a better life. So I owe it to them to at least be successful, you know, at least on paper. That's sort of what the narrative is. So I to answer your question, I would say like career wise, it's like, and I think comparison, it's hard to not compare, right? Like, you know, I worked at LinkedIn, so I think LinkedIn is very guilty of, man, like seems like everyone's crushing it in life, and like here I am, like still playing catch up, you know. But objectively speaking, like I'm actually doing pretty well, you know, but it takes a lot of like being with myself and like turning off, like deleting social media off of my phone for like, you know, a month for me to like be able to make that real, come to that realization. But I think I would say I get attached a lot, like specifically to like body image. Like I'm like, oh, when I was running like cross country and stuff, like I weighed like 120 and now I'm like close to 150, you know. But I mean, I'm more muscular now, right? But I'm like, oh man, like it used to be like easier to like not have as much belly fat, you know.
Yeah, there's even that comparison to a past version of ourselves that we think is better, right? Yeah, and something that you pointed out earlier was this idea of what success looks like. So I wanted to ask you if you could define your version of a successful life, what would that look like for you?
I think that's the scary part, right? I feel like I'm already living that, and in saying that, it's almost like a bit of survivor's guilt, because it's like, oh, here, all these tech layoffs, and like, some of my friends are just trying to like find someone to marry, and like, I just bought this amazing Model Y, like Tesla, and I'm like, oh, life is good. It's like, am I wrong to like feel good? Like, it's like, I feel like society always is like, oh, there has to be some problem, some mission that we have to solve, right? But I think the more I detach myself from like, oh, I should volunteer for this amount of nonprofits. Oh, I should raise this much money, or oh, I should be visiting my parents more often. It's like, that's a lot of expectations. So I do feel blessed that like I live my ideal life, because I only came up to this realization because I went overboard and I hired like six different coaches, like people who I like look up to and admire, and I'm like, oh, I want to live your life. And then like they all ask me like, oh, like what does your ideal life look like? And I'm like, oh, go to like a lot of Tony Robbins conferences, like have my men's group, be able to like have a good life that has autonomy and work-life balance, and then also be able to travel the world. And then I'm like, they're like, oh, okay, like so what would you have to do to get there? And I'm like, oh wait, I'm already doing all that.
Yeah, and then to realize that, I know you said it sounds really scary to admit that out loud. What is it that makes it scary to say, like, oh, I am living the life that I want?
I think like coming from a place of privilege, right? I live in the United States, right? Like, I'm Asian, right? So like cops aren't really pulling me over just because of like the color of my skin, right? Like I definitely think, and having come from, living off of poverty, like not most, a lot of my friends like haven't quite gotten out of that cycle, right? So I do think, I don't know. I think it's just like society says like, oh, like when you're older, like you will have all this wisdom and stuff like that. And I don't know. I just think it's just interesting, because I think society has so many expectations of us. And I'm starting to see that like, oh, okay, as long as I live life on my terms and I'm happy and I have high quality relationships with good people, like that's all that matters, you know?
It sounds like you're creating your own set of expectations for yourself. And in some ways I see that as detachment from what society says or what other people think they should be doing, because you get to decide how you want your life to look like. And so it's really neat to hear that, yeah, you're already living the life that you want.
I think Landmark helped a lot. Accomplishment coaching helped a lot. Tony Robbins, I think a combination of everything, EMDR. I think I like really went deep into the inner workings of my soul, my mind. So I think I had to do that in order to like figure out like, oh, it doesn't serve me to like be addicted to LinkedIn, or like, oh, it doesn't serve me to like, like make this post in order to get a certain amount of clicks and likes. And I'm like, oh, so I really had to like battle and like really see like, oh, like every time I won like an award at LinkedIn or something, like it didn't really give me as much joy as I thought it would, you know?
Yeah, I think what you're talking about here with like posting and not getting so attached to like the number of likes, like not getting so attached to these metrics, in some ways sounds very freeing for you. How would you say, like, whether it's thoughts or something else, like what has contributed to this ability to not be so focused on these kind of metrics?
I think journaling helps a lot. Like, it sounds like you're a big journaler. You're very introspective as well, right? I think journaling a lot, like every day I journal. So, I could just be like, after this call, I'll probably be like, wow, like this sounds awesome to do Vipassana. Like maybe I can like intentionally, plan that right in the future and like let my employer know, like, hey, this is like one of my goals, right? Like, something like that. So I think I'll just try to journal like every day. So even if it's like something little, at least like I get it out of my head and like into the reality.
Yeah, when it comes to these metrics too that we were talking about, like getting these awards at companies and like the number of likes or followers on LinkedIn, I often see or hear people say like, oh, I really wanted my post to generate this number of impressions because that's maybe correlated to how many people will be impacted by this post. But then I think that takes away from the intention of sharing your knowledge in the first place, which is, I don't know, I guess everybody can have their own reasons for something like posting. I think for me, when it comes to putting out knowledge there or putting out knowledge there, I look at it as just, hey, like, why am I doing this? Doing this because just want to share, and my hope is that someone may find value and be able to apply whatever they get out of my content somewhere in their lives. And if it doesn't stick, like, that is okay. And for me, that's very freeing to just say, okay, you know what? I don't care how many people see it, how many number of likes I get, because that's not why I'm doing this. So I think connecting back to the main reason why you're doing something has helped me. And my guess is that maybe you resonate with some of that.
Yeah, that's a good point. 'Cause I do think, there's like two ways to look at it. I think there's like a lot of like, and maybe I'm judging here, right? But there's a lot of content that I used to relate to as like, why did this all this like weird content that I guess is maybe I look at it as like sometimes people want to detach from reality and like stupid things or like stuff that doesn't require a lot of thinking. Maybe those inherently get a ton of views on YouTube or Facebook or whatever because like it's in a way like escaping like the reality of life versus like sometimes I'll put like really deep like topics, around like meaningful stuff, right? And like those don't always get like a lot of engagement. I mean, it's impactful, whereas like when people reach out, they're like, wow, like that really caused me to reflect and be more introspective. So, but it definitely won't get like as many views, right? It'll be more of just like, so yeah, that's a deep topic. I do think to your point, when it's coming from like an authentic place, like a place of like, for me, like I'll write stuff that maybe at night, like I'll wake up super early and I'm like, oh, I need to like, I have this like spark of inspiration. Like, let me make a post about this or make a video about this. Those actually typically do pretty well because it's like very authentic. It's not canned. It's not like planned. It's like, there's
Yeah,
like a
straight from the
genuineness.
heart.
Yeah. It sounds, and you're pretty good at that. It's if it feels like, right? Or seems like.
Thanks. I try. I think I try to post from the heart. That also seems to be when my writing seems to flow the most. And yeah, I just wanted to change the culture of what people share. I think it's very refreshing when people show the imperfect sides of their life, and that, it isn't all just like, the truth is, life isn't all butterflies and rainbows. There's a lot of downs that people go through. And so we were just talking about my layoff here recently, and one thing that I learned from Vipassana was, again, that impermanence theme. It also just so happened to fall, that Vipassana course fell right before I experienced the layoff. And I think the timing was very coincidental, but also meant to be, because I was able to see the layoff as a moment or just an opportunity where, I could practice what I learned from Vipassana in real life. And yeah, I think for anybody who's interested in the course, it's also free. And I think it just attests to how, like, this is an experience that is accessible to anybody if they want to attend. And I think it also speaks to the nature of the course. It's like if you're, it's all donation based if you want to donate, but it's most importantly, it's accessible.
Yeah, it's what like piques your curiosity where you're always seeking some sort of personal improvement or like a different level of consciousness. Like, was there like, would you say like a defining moment that caused you to really act upon it or?
That's a good question. I wouldn't say there's a defining moment. I think it's just the internal, this internal yearning to constantly learn about myself, learn how I relate to the world, to relate to other people. And I think life is just a constant evolution of growth. The person that we are today is very different from the person we are yesterday. Not even a person a year ago, I'd say yesterday, because every single moment we're making a new decision. And that decision puts us on a different path, a different trajectory than maybe another decision. And so, yeah, in terms of things that have piqued my interest, I think it's just the curiosity and love for learning, right? There's so much available in this world, and I think it's also neat to be able to experience things that you would have never thought to experience. Like for you, I think it's, I know you do a lot of traveling and a lot of these Spartan races and these CrossFit events as a way of improving your own physical health. And then for me, I think it's wanting to build up my mental resilience. So looking at the spiritual path is just something that I wanted to explore in these last few years.
That's awesome. And I'm sure you get this all the time, but I think you have this like a very pure, like good-heartedness that is like I would say rare, 'cause like of course there's people that have it. But yours is like such a pureness that like, and I'm sure we all make mistakes. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm sure, you know, we all have our own demons and stuff like that, right? But it does seem very genuine and very like your essence is very pure, you know?
Thanks. That's really nice, Davidson.
Yeah. Were you always like that
No.
or?
No. That's interesting that you describe my essence as very, very pure. I appreciate that, but I definitely would not say that I've made zero mistakes. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, whether it's with people, like close friends, at work. I've definitely made mistakes there, and I think that's inevitable. Every single person on this planet will have made mistakes at some point. But I think it's the mistakes and how you react to them that define who you are and define who you want to be. So definitely not perfect by any means. And I'm okay with that. I think accepting to the imperfections in myself and the flaws and knowing that I have a lot of work to do personally with my relationships is something that I've been learning to accept, in this past year. And hearing difficult feedback is challenging for me, actually. It's very, very challenging because it hits the ego, it stings, but it's part of just the growing process. So, yeah, no one is perfect. I'm definitely not.
When you say feedback, do you mean from management, from real other relationships, just
Oh,
in general?
yeah, mostly personal relationships. Yeah, so romantic relationships and specifically with a romantic partner, I've had some difficult feedback
Oh,
that's,
really?
yeah, and I think it's inevitable when you're learning someone new. But in a romantic context, like the way you are as a partner is very different from who you are, or it can be very different from who you are at work, right? So the way you communicate, for example, with your spouse is probably very different from how you would talk to a friend or a colleague. And just learning how my communication style can affect someone else on an intimate level is something that I've been just being I've been exposed to in this past year. And I think just understanding that, oh, the way I communicate could do a lot of work. It's sometimes it hurts because you might think, oh, I'm such a great communicator, I'm such a good listener. And then your partner tells you, actually, like sometimes I don't feel listened to when you do this or when you don't do this. I think that can be a hard pill to swallow, but it's also necessary to understand what you can do differently if you want a relationship to work. So that's what I was referring to when I talk about feedback.
Yeah, no, that definitely hits. That definitely resonates. I would say most of my friends would be like, oh, like I'm a great friend and listener. But yeah, I'm sure my wife would be like, well, sometimes he's not right. But I think, yeah, what I'm hearing from this conversation is that humanity and everything, that impermanence is a good takeaway, especially with our careers. With I someone that I know passed away recently, and I'm helping his wife set up a GoFundMe, right? And like he was like full of life, and then like literally like it just felt like the next day I'm like, wait, what? Like I felt like I was just talking to this dude, so crazy how like you said, like in a moment's notice, like that can all go away. And like you said, it's the impermanence is like a big takeaway. But
I'm sorry to hear that about your friend. That's really
I feel like death. I don't know about you, but I think that's like definitely one of the harder emotions to or concepts to be with, right? It's like, oh wow, like we are gonna all die one day. It's like it's so weird to think that. For me, at least it is.
It is. It's a very jarring reality of life that everybody's life will stop at some point and you don't know when. And I remember reading in The Untethered Soul, if you're familiar with the book by Michael Singer, he talks about how instead of viewing death with fear, we can view death as a motivator, as a way to say, because we're all going to die at some point, like, what do you want to do with your time on Earth? And I've been just carrying that with me because, I do think it's very powerful, and it makes you think about, well, if I have only X amount of years to make an impact on people in my life, what do I want to do with that time? How do I want to live? Who do I want to be? What kind of person do I want to be? And what kind of change I want to make in the world? So it is a very scary concept, but there's also that reality of it.
Well, yeah, I think you have to go soon, but I just want to acknowledge you for, the intentionality of the legacy that you want to leave, your presence, your ability to listen so deeply, understand people so compassionately with love. And yeah, you're such a unique human being, and I'm so glad that, we've stayed in touch. And yeah, I have no doubt that you're going to continue to support your clients to reach all of their goals, and just be such a huge clearing for everyone. And with every conversation you have with folks.
Thanks, Davidson. I appreciate you. I appreciate you for hosting these calls and for staying connected with people in your community. I think that's one of your biggest strengths is to build these relationships wherever you go. And I'm just constantly inspired by your own growth and your eagerness to just share what you're learning with the world. So I'm always excited when I get to catch up with you.
Yeah,
And
likewise.
yeah, I'm excited to hear what comes up for you in these next few months.
And you too. And for anyone who's listening, if you see any executive coaching opportunities or anything with leadership development, learning and development, and I think you mentioned a couple other things, right? What were some of the
Oh,
other
people
things?
analytics.
People analytics and
Yeah, that and yeah, just learning and development roles, coaching, leadership positions.
okay.
I'd be open to just hearing what folks have out there.
Oh, I might introduce you to my friend Clinton, who's like I think he leads like people analytics at Pepsi or something. I'll just connect you guys. Maybe that could be a good
Thanks.
yeah.
Thanks. I'd appreciate that. Thanks,
Awesome.
Davidson.
Cool, everyone. Well, I'll tag you in I'll tag your LinkedIn. Are there any other ways people can stay in touch with
Reach
you
me.
or reach out to you?
Yeah, I think LinkedIn is great. And yeah, LinkedIn is great. We'll just
Okay,
keep it there.
perfect. So I'll make a link to your LinkedIn and we'll chat soon. Take care.
Thanks, Davidson. All right, see everyone.